Welcome to the Encourage Project. I'm Amy Fairchild, and I am so happy that you're here. You know, I am so grateful that we're building this Encourage Project community, and it would mean the world to me if, after today's episode, if you'd leave us a review, let us know what you're enjoying, and let us know what we can add. You know, we're always looking for new guests and new opportunities and new things to talk about and share with the community, and I'd love to hear from you. You can follow us on Instagram at @the_encourage_project. And you can go to the website, theencourageproject.com, and send me a note. I'd love to hear from you, like I said. And before we get into today's guest, I want to talk just a minute about apologies and amends. You know, I've been going through the last 8 weeks. I've been in a self-development program through Brad Jensen's organization. And if you haven't heard of Brad Jensen, he was a guest on the show, and I'll put it in the show notes. But one of the things that we talked about during the 8-week program was making amends. And certainly a lot of folks are aware of that in the context of recovery. Well, that doesn't apply to me, but making amends absolutely does. So as I was in gratitude this morning and I was in reflection this morning, I was thinking about a conversation I had at dinner the other night. I was with some folks at dinner, and we were talking about family and stuff. And I asked what was really kind of a thoughtless question to a friend of mine. And I realized that it probably put him in a very uncomfortable situation, and it might even have been hurtful. It was really bugging me. And so I texted him this morning. I'm like, "Hey, dude, do you have a couple minutes to talk?" And he's like, "Yeah." And so we get on the phone, and I'm like, "Hey, this is what happened the other night, and I'm feeling really weird about it. And I'm really, really sorry if I put you in an uncomfortable situation. And further, I want to commit to you that I recognize it was thoughtless, and I want to commit to being more conscious in the future." And he was like, "You know, you are so sweet." He's like, "Thank you so much for taking the time to do that." And here's what I got to thinking afterward. You know, when we make apologies, apologies are words. It's the actual, "Here's what I did and I feel bad about it." But it's in the amends. It's in the opportunity to make things right, or it's in the opportunity to make things whole, that we really have the opportunity to connect with others and experience growth. And here's the thing. It doesn't matter what I intended when I made that comment or when I asked that question at dinner. I didn't intend to hurt his feelings. I didn't intend to make it uncomfortable. It was thoughtless. And none of that matters. What matters is how my action made him feel. And that's the thing that needs to be amended. And so when I said, "Hey, you know, I'm going to be more conscious in the future," is that acceptable to you? Because frankly, he's the only one that can tell me whether he was made whole or whether it makes things right. And he said, "Yeah." And I, you know, I know it doesn't take away any of the discomfort, but it felt good for him. So I just want to share that with you guys today, because I think a lot of times we think, you know, after we've done something that was perhaps hurtful, we hope it'll go away, or we think we'll forget about it. And the fact of the matter is, if it's bothering you, don't wait. Act. Make a phone call. Send a text. Ask for a conversation and apologize. And also, just take it one step further and do your best to make amends, to make that person whole. So there you go. So let's jump into today's guest. Oh my gosh, I can't wait. We talked for a couple minutes before we started recording, and he just makes me smile. So here's the thing. I love when the universe connects me with people who are really perfect for the Encourage Project community. You know, you guys know that I'm a huge practitioner of a morning routine, and part of my morning routine is really about practicing daily affirmations. And one of my affirmations includes, "I am a light, and I want to share all different kinds of stories about what's possible with the world." That is something I say and ruminate on every single day. And further, I'm open to connecting with those people. And interestingly, today's guest was an answer to that. You know, I mean, I was contacted by an agency, which, you guys, until today, I had completely shied away from, because I somehow had this ego thing going that I had to find all of my guests and I had to have a personal relationship with every guest. Well, that's just not true, people. I don't know every person in the world. So whatever. So for whatever reason, I actually responded to this person who reached out to me, and I'm so, so happy that I did. Taylor Rochesty is the best-selling author of A New 2020 Vision, Cultivate Joy, Reprogram Your Mind, and Define Life Through an Authentic Lens. Holy cow. He shares a unique perspective on the uncertainty of tomorrow and an active vision for the future. And as a professional athlete who has traveled the world playing basketball, the message is a roadmap to design a new reality, reprogram your thoughts, and to define life through authenticity. He uses his own underdog role and humble approach to meet people where they're at and to really embolden others to strive for more and commandeer every opportunity. I mean, if that's not what the Encourage Project is all about, I don't really know what is. So without further ado, I'd love to introduce the Encourage Project community to Taylor Rochesty. Welcome.
Thank you so much. What an incredible introduction. I think I need to pay whoever wrote that introduction, because that is truly incredible. Thank you for the kind words. Thank you so much for having me. And I'm very, very into what you're doing and love your words.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. I'm so glad you're here. I forewarned him that the first question was going to be this, so hopefully he's prepared. I want to hear a little bit about you and kind of your life outside of basketball before we dig into some of the real gutsy stuff about the book and some other juicy things. So tell us a little bit about you.
Well, I'm just all about basketball. So what else do you have? Man, I mean, what a great question. I think a lot of time athletes get pigeonholed into a role, into a kind of an idea of who they are. The external world loves to tell you who you are, what you do, what you should talk about, and kind of defines your life. What defines me? Definitely not basketball. Basketball is something that I do. It's definitely not who I am. I'm a husband. I'm a father. I'm a brother, I'm a son, I'm a cousin. I mean, there's so many incredible things. I'm interested in so many things. My wife just told me since COVID hit, I've lived in 12 different houses.
Oh, wow.
I've traveled and lived in about 12 different countries. My daughter was born in China. My son was born in France. I married a beautiful, amazing French woman. Half my family doesn't speak my native language.
Wow.
There's just so many different incredible facets that have added quality, joy, and happiness to my life. So I was born in Houston, Texas, but raised in sunny Santa Barbara, California. I'm an optimist. My mom said I was smiling since birth, and I continue smiling. So I'm definitely on this train of positivity, on this train of joy, on this train of optimism. And so it couldn't be better than being part of an Encourage Project and really trying to reach people, help people, learn from people, communicate with people, and just be involved in their life.
Oh, I love that. And what I love is that you gave us the whole picture. You know, I can imagine as a professional athlete, the first question is, dude, you know, what are your stats? And I totally get that. You know, how do you think the Razorbacks did this year? Whatever. I get that people start with that. And I love that you answered the whole question, all the things. That just makes me so happy. So I do want to dive into the book because, and I guess I'm kind of doing this backwards, but hey, it's my show, so I can go backwards. I want to know how or what prompted you to actually write the book. Tell us a little bit about what it is, but what really led you to that calling, frankly, of writing a book about that?
Well, as I got close to publishing the book, I was doing some interviews and people were asking me, they said, you know, why'd you write the book? Who are your inspiration? What authors did you draw from? And what authors are you currently reading? And I was trying to think back and I said, okay, if you heard of the book, If You Give a Mouse a Cookie, that's kind of the last book that I read. And that's kind of where I started. So I wasn't really a reader or a writer. I love to write things down. I love to take notes. I love to write down goals. I love to make lists, things of that nature. But I was never really a writer. My daughter's 2.5 years old. When we were pregnant with our daughter, I started to write her a letter for the future. And my intention was to give it to her when she graduated high school. And so about 18 and a half years down the road, she would know what life was like for me when she was born. my aspirations for her for the future. The world is a pretty crazy place right now, especially with social media and how the world can define us, like I mentioned earlier. And I really wanted to write her this letter and let her know that she's in control of who she is and how the world sees her and how she sees herself and that amazing relationship you have with the person you see in the mirror. And so I wrote this as an encouraging letter for her future and an optimism for her. And then we moved to China. She was born in China and I had a lot of time there traveling while I was playing basketball there. And I stretched it out into some sentences, some paragraphs, and turned into some chapters. And I kind of narrowed down a vision. And then 2020 hit and it was a pandemic. And it just seemed like the perfect calling that people are looking for a different vision. They're looking for a different lens. They're looking to see the world in a different way. They lost a lot of things and things were stripped away from them. And they needed some encouragement. And so I figured this was a perfect time to bring the book out. It kind of plays on that 2020 vision. Obviously, there's a little metaphor with having perfect eyesight. Mm-hmm. And just to end it all, I mean, I've had 3 eye surgeries myself. The first one in Tijuana, Mexico. I got a crazy story there. And at the end of the day, I realized my eyes are still not perfect. So if I've gone through all that and I can't see the world perfectly through my eyes, then I needed to work on the lens that I had in my mind and being able to see the world more clearly. And so that was the whole base behind the book.
Wow. What a really extraordinary gift, though, to give your daughter. I mean, talk about wisdom and experience and love and insight and all the things. What a really extraordinary gift. And the last thing kind of that you mentioned, though, is what really, really sticks with me is, you know, seeing is not physical. It is often through our minds. So talk a little bit about that. Talk a little bit about how you came to the awareness of the lens of the mind. Talk about that.
I think a lot of it had to do with my traveling. I talk about understanding truths, and we have this idea that we have to be right and that there's right and wrong. And so if I'm right, then you're wrong. And if you're right, maybe that I'm wrong. And it creates this distance with people. It creates a gap between countries, cultures, all that stuff. So I was going around the world and I realized that a kid growing up in Germany or France is reading different textbooks than a kid growing up in America. So once you start having more of an understanding that the world is seen through these different ways, then we need to connect on a deeper level. And we can open up our mind to be wrong, to evolve, to understand that there are new truths and there are new realizations in life. And I want to incorporate that all with my kids and my family. And I want to take the best of each culture and the best of what I've learned and to be able to wrap that all up into some knowledge and be able to pass it down. I think you said that's a great thing for my daughter, but it puts a lot of pressure on trying to give my son something. So I don't know. I don't know what it will be for him because this was really an idea for Joy, which is the name of my daughter. And then, you know, Leon's got a lot of pressure. So I got to think of something great for him. Maybe the second book will be for him.
Or maybe you turn it into a blockbuster movie. It's an action film, right? Turn it to a movie. You know, you said something about truths and right or wrong. And it so resonated with me. I mean, if you guys could see me, I have dimples. My dimples hurt because I was smiling so much. You know, it resonated with me because I have a very similar experience. You know, I've worked in a lot of countries. And when I spent time actually working in Ghana, it was such a vastly different experience than what I had known in the United States that I couldn't help but broaden my understanding. I mean, you know, you hear that kind of casual phrase, you can't unknow something. There is so much truth in that. Once you've been exposed, you cannot unknow something. You cannot unknow that people have different experiences, and whether you like them or not, whether you like the people or not, the fact is there are different things to consider. And so if you take a look at you kind of discovered truths, and some people can take the discovery of different truths and lead themselves down a very dark path. They can lead themselves down the path of despair and, oh my gosh, there's so much suffering in the world and there's so many, and because there are. How do you, or how have you taken that awareness and the things that you can't unknow now and really continued to have an optimistic view?
I think the biggest thing that you can do is try to have a positive filter on life, which is one of the main themes in the book and one of the main themes in my life. And I think everybody has that friend of theirs that they think is really naive and life is rainbows and butterflies. People call that person naive. People call that person, you know, they're living in the clouds. And I challenge the reprogramming of the mind. I challenge that to think that the alternative is what I call guest filtering. Because if you're not positively filtering the world at all times and taking everything that you encounter and trying to create some kind of positive spin on it, then you're trying to guess everything that you hear, every person that you encounter, everything that you see. And that is way more naive to me. It's like an uncrackable code that people are trying to decipher.
Yes.
And people are trying to understand, okay, even my wife, I don't know if she drove home today, if she sat in traffic, or if she breezed through every green light. That could play effect into the way that we communicate, plays into effect the way that we treat each other. And so the people that are not positively filtering the world, they're trying to understand every single word that comes their way. They're trying to dissect text messages and periods and emojis. And if you didn't call me back on time, or if you see something that's disturbing, if you learn something that's disturbing, I mean, I think we should be constantly learning, constantly evolving. And as you realize these new truths, you can totally find a positive spin on everything. And the example I like to use is if somebody comes up to me and just says, I hate you, that's pretty clear, pretty serious. There's nothing positive about that. Well, you can spin even something like that and say like, wow, I'm learning ways not to communicate. I'm learning examples to teach my daughter about divisiveness and not inclusivity. I can use a lot of the things that I've learned and experienced over the years, especially in basketball with lots of fans and going to different places and being at my home gym or being in an away gym and realizing the animosity and hate that comes from different fans. It's really incredible to see. And I use that as fuel moving forward because that's my choice. And I definitely choose to see things in that way.
I love that you make it conscious. That's the first thing I love about it because it is truly a choice. And there is a difference, and I'll label the elephant in the room. There is a difference between toxic positivity and choosing to have your first view of a situation as being positive. Certainly your view can change over time, but like you said, being stuck in traffic, you know, or here's the one I like to use with people is when they get cut off by somebody in traffic, oh, that guy's such a jerk, blah, blah, blah. Well, I've been training myself to say, well, wait a minute, maybe he's trying to get to the emergency room. Maybe he's late for the birth of a kid. Maybe whatever. And what I have found is when I choose to start from that place that assumes the best, you know, I assume the best positive story or the best outcome first, it tends to 9.5 times out of 10, it tends to lead me down a much more fulfilling and optimistic path. And that's it's not to say you can't find out later that the guy really was a jerk, whatever. I just choose to assume positive intent.
Well, obviously, I know that you've never cut anybody off in a car, so
never.
You're allowed to.
I've never been a jerk. I've never been a jerk. Yeah, no. In fact, I was a jerk 2 nights ago, apparently. But you know, but it's a choice, and I love that you call out that it's conscious. I think the other thing too, I'd be interested to hear, is what lessons. I mean, can you think of a specific lesson that led you to the realization that you wanted to choose an optimistic view? Because I think it evolves. And then also people who tend to live that way, something happens or they wake up one day and it really is okay, I do view things differently. Was there something specific that changed for you? Or was there some realization where you went, oh yeah, I am kind of an optimistic person?
I think it'd be a better story if I could say that, hey, you know, a light turned on one day. It was Tuesday, August 15th, and, you know, 2001, and I became
birds
an optimist.
Were singing.
Yeah, I don't really think that's the way it went. Mm-hmm. You know, you can talk to friends and family, and they've definitely thought that I was a very optimistic person and very happy person from being young. I'm so fortunate that I had really caring parents and was taught life lessons from parents and cousins and role models. I had an older brother that always treated me with love and respect. I have little things that like communicational things where my parents said stuff like, what else can I do for you?
Wow.
On a daily basis. Hey, is there anything else that you need? And it wasn't like from a spoiled standpoint, but it was just from a caring standpoint. And so you have a base. Some people come with that base. And I always thought I could do everything. I was encouraged to do things. And so sometimes it comes organically and sometimes you have to work at it more. And I encourage both sides, because even if you have it as a base, I feel like we should be constantly working on it and constantly being aware, like you said, that there's choices. We can create that joy and that positivity and that happiness all the time. We surround ourselves with it. I call it highlighting happiness. And so we can highlight it all the time. So I'd say it's a little bit of everything.
Wow. So do you think though, having been raised that way, and I will admit that's a very fortunate, very abundant way to have been raised. Definitely. Do you think that has prepared you specifically to address adversity, or did you ever experience where something came up and you're like, man, this sucks and I don't know how to deal with it, and you felt like, wow, now I'm out in the real world, what happened? Has that happened to you?
Yeah, I like to do a lot of metaphors with basketball. So basketball, you watch a lot of video, you watch a lot of film, and that's how the game's played on video. And so you can hear stuff, you can read stuff, but until you experience it, until you're in the game and you experience it yourself, it's one thing to hear about it, it's one thing to live it. So obviously adversity can hit anybody. Sometimes it's adversity that's as real as losing someone in your life. And sometimes your life seems incredible. And you're like, what's this person got a problem about? Everything's perfect for them. They make multi-million dollars. They have this big house and they're going through crazy adversity just inside their mind. And so I think we just have to be aware of all that and realize that it comes from so many different angles, and just, you know, we can reprogram it. We can work on different things to understand it and pivot and reprogram.
I do want to talk about the reprogramming, and I want to go back to something that you said. It was around having a perception, and we're all guilty of this. We see someone who on the outside has the big house and the shiny car and has all the things that we think are making a life fulfilling and successful. And it is easy to forget that it doesn't matter the context or the environment. Every person on this planet is part of the human experience to have challenges and adversity and things that are difficult to deal with. How do you think people can begin to, I call it having a compassionate view of others? You know, I recognize that, and I've recognized that my whole life. I don't know how I've always done that, but I've always been able to look at people and go, I get that you look all shiny and pretty on the outside, and I also feel that you have pain, and I have compassion for that. How do you think we develop that so that we have compassion regardless of what we experience?
I think we try to grow and evolve as an individual. And when you see people that you might want to envy, I talk about not envying the person, but envying some attributes that come with that person. So yes. How did they get there? If they have money, how do they have money? Were they driven? Were they tenacious? Were they an underdog? You know, and then go after those qualities and add that to your life. And then when you see someone that might seem less fortunate, you can say, hey, learning about yourself a little bit, what I would like, what I wouldn't like, situations that I'd like to be in, not be in. If I want to be in this situation, I need to work harder to get there. And I think the focus is less on trying to judge others, because we are all going through so much stuff, and whatever situation we think we're in, there's probably someone that might look down on us. There's probably someone that looks up to us.
Yes.
And it's the same thing going on with us. So if we think we're perfect, then we can kind of look over there, but we're all going through similar types of things, like you said.
Yeah. Oh, I love that so much. I love that. I think a lot of, in some circles, they call that, you know, looking to someone as an example, as an expander, someone who expands our point of view, whether that's someone, like you said, who has an attribute that we want to cultivate, or maybe they have a lifestyle that we want to enjoy, or they exhibit some characteristic that we want to develop. That's looking to expanders. And I've talked about that a couple of times, because expanders may be someone that you know, or it could be like you and I in today's conversation. I didn't know you till 29 minutes ago, and you've already expanded my view of what's possible in some ways. And I think that's extraordinary. And I would encourage people to make conscious effort to find expanders, whether that's in lifestyle or work or character or experience. It's amazing when you are looking to others from a place of how can that person expand my understanding and expand my experience versus man, I wish I had what he had. It's amazing how it shifts your everyday experience and the joy you get from interacting with other people.
I've never heard the word expander before. So I'm really happy that you said that. You talked earlier in the show, you said you like to be a light. Mm-hmm. And I love the idea of, there's a quote, whether they know the origin of the quote or not, it's be the light that helps others see.
Yes.
And so it's just like, that's the whole idea of being an expander. I've never heard it from expander. So I'll be definitely going to be using that moving forward. Yeah. That's awesome.
Isn't that a cool word? And I learned that from Lacey Phillips. She has an organization called To Be Magnetic, and she's a manifestation expert. But that word just stuck with me, and it makes perfect sense. And I'll refer that to in the show notes for everybody. I think the other thing too, you mentioned the light. I was in a group call the other day with some colleagues, and we talked about being authentic light. I know one of the things that's really important in your book, and I want to talk about this, is the notion of authenticity. And I think authenticity is one of those words that is overused and understood or misunderstood. And the analogy I used in this group call is, I said, guys, you can either be the fluorescent light in the garage, or you can be the bonfire in the backyard. And they kind of looked at me, and I'm like, think about it. Every human is attracted to fire. We are. We're attracted to candles. We're attracted to bonfires. We're attracted to the burning bush or whatever, because that's part of our genetic makeup and experience as humans. We get energy from fire. We get warmth from fire. We get all kinds of things, and it provides light. However, that fluorescent light in the garage, that provides light too, but it doesn't provide warmth. It doesn't entice you to engage with it. And so being an authentic light is something that I think is extraordinary, and it's an opportunity and an obligation that people have on occasion. And I love that, and I take that very seriously. So anyway, I could go off on that forever. We're back to you now. We want to talk about reprogramming. That's what I want to talk about next. So talk about reprogramming, because there's definitely a context around the word reprogram. But tell us what it means for you and how it fits into your view of the 2020 vision.
I think reprogramming is interesting. So a lot of people in my family, they're like, oh, it's like a computer book, or like it's a scientific book. And I was just like,
or it's mind control.
Yeah. You know me, right? It's definitely not that, but reprogramming is interesting because there's a bunch of different parts that kind of have to come into play. We talked about having those truths and having an understanding based off of how you grew up. Sometimes you need to break down some walls. You need to break down some understandings. My first season overseas was going to play in Germany. I've never been to Germany before. The only thing I've read about Germany was like from world wars, you know? And so I know that I'm not that naive, but at the same time, I'm a little naive, never been there and never had an idea of what it was like. And you have to break down certain walls before you can reprogram it with something else. But the idea of reprogramming is realizing that there is a process that you have to go through, and it's a very cognitive process, and you have to be aware of your surroundings. And so anything can be reprogrammed, I believe. And what you seek is what you're going to find. And so if you're seeking to find a joyful life and a happy life, and you're seeking to bring positivity in your life, you're going to go find it. And sometimes you need to reprogram it. So for example, you have a morning intake that is very external, and you have the world telling you who you are. So you wake up, and first thing you do is you grab your phone. And what's the world telling you? You might check your application, and it says that the weather is not going to be great today. And so subconsciously you're already saying, oh, today might not be a great day. Mm-hmm. Or you check I use these examples a lot, but you check the stock market, or you check your text that you get, or you don't get, or you, the likes that you got, or you didn't get. And so you're programming your mind already for the day, without even checking in on yourself. And I talk about the internal needs to influence the external, and not the other way around, especially in the morning. You can reprogram the way you see adversity. You can reprogram the idea of being tired. I talk about how often we use the words, I'm tired, or I'm not, you know, I don't have the energy to do it. Especially as an athlete, we complain a lot and we say we're tired. And how often—
But you have reason to be, let's be clear.
No, but that's not even authentic too. We're too tired for what? To live my life?
Oh, true.
You know, too tired to realize that Tuesday is just as exciting as Friday, even though Friday's the game and Tuesday's the practice. You know, too often we resort back to these cop-outs, these cliches that are like, oh, you know, just hanging out with the wife and kids, you know, or whatever. And yeah, we need to reprogram that there's different ways to view the world. There's different ways to speak. There's different ways to bring positivity into existence. And people look at positivity as a reaction to things. Something happens, and so I'm positive or I'm negative. Something happens, so I'm happy or not happy. Well, we can cultivate joy and we can cultivate happiness. So no matter what's happening externally, we can step into each room and we can be happy with our surroundings and happy with who we are.
Yes. Oh my gosh, so much yes. There's like three things. The first one is when you spoke about cultivating and positive and negative as being reactionary versus I would describe them as things that I put out as outputs. I mean, it's absolutely true that a person can choose to enter with positivity versus being reacting to it. And there's a difference between reacting and responding. You know, you don't have to necessarily respond to everything that comes your way. And you certainly don't have to react, but you can choose the response of positivity. You can choose the response of being discouraged. You can choose the response of being pissed off about it. And further, you could begin the one who starts the process. You could be the one who starts from the positive space and cultivate that, like you said. The other thing that you talked about that just resonates with me ridiculously, because I've been spending a lot of conscious effort in this space for quite a while, is tearing down things that are not working to my greatest benefit and replacing them and building them with something else. And you nailed it when you said you actually do have the opportunity to reprogram in that context. You have to make room for it by getting rid of the old garbage and replacing it with something that serves you in a more meaningful and helpful way. I think the question I would have is, how does a person get the initial awareness? Because oftentimes people don't change because they don't know that there's an alternative. And how does a person cultivate the awareness that there's even a possibility that I can take out the garbage and replace it with something that works to my greatest good?
Wow, that's a lot of amazing questions. You're going to have to, sometimes I get too excited and expand so you can narrow it down. How do they get that awareness? Well, first of all, a lot of times people that are looking towards that positivity, they're looking to fill a hole, or they're looking because they realize something's missing. So sometimes they're searching for something and don't know what it is. I like to write down goals, because sometimes you're walking around and you're unaware of things that might help you with your goals walking by. And because your eyes aren't open to it, you expand the world. You're open to learning. You talked about not trying to always be right and trying to constantly learn. So your mind is open to learning new things. Mm-hmm. But that awareness comes from so many things, from talking to expanders. I wrote down that you're the common denominator in all your experiences.
Yes.
You know, and so you're always there. So what do you need to be aware of? People have negative triggers. They need to look for positive triggers. And with this reprogramming, especially when it comes to adversity, I talked in the book about you have holes from the past. So whenever people have holes, they can look at it as a hole, or they can look at it as an opportunity to be filled. And so
yes,
you're looking around and I'm trying to fill all the holes. I'm trying to gain as much as I can. I talk so much about being an underdog with sports and life. I'm this underdog that's constantly searching for stuff. So I think the best thing you can do is listen to a podcast like yours. What you seek is what you're going to find. You need to surround yourself with that positivity and cultivate it. So when I started writing this book, I started following different people on Instagram. I started researching new things. I started wanting to know more about this book area and this book world. And I said, if I wanted to be surrounded in positivity, if I wanted to be cultivating this joy, then I have to physically do it. I have to be part of my own awareness. And so I say you have to be proactive within your own joy and within your own life. So the first thing is realizing that, hey, today's an opportunity. I'm going to be proactive. I'm going to surround myself in it. I'm going to listen to different songs. I'm going to listen to different podcasts. I'm not going to be able to go through a day without hearing positivity flying my way.
Oh, I love that. I think if I could paraphrase what you just said, it's the difference between waiting and creating. I think so many people go through life waiting for something to come their way that makes them go, oh, well, I'm positive now, or I'll see things differently now, versus understanding that they absolutely have the power to create the positive place in the first place. That was
2020 with the pandemic. It's one of the first couple paragraphs of the book. And it says, hey, this thing happened. And we're waiting for this new normal. We're waiting for the government or the world or whoever it might be to tell us like, hey, you can go back to your regular lives now, and you can go back to being happy. And we have the choice every single day, whether we're in confinement, whether we're in, you know, we're at a party, whatever it might be. We have the choice every day to cultivate that joy for sure.
Yes. And it's a matter of perspective. You know, it really is. It really is. Because like in my hometown, during the pandemic, we were on lockdown like a lot of folks were. And I lived by myself. And also I wasn't seeing anyone. So that just made it feel like the walls were caving in on me. And I had a realization one day, like you just said, I get to choose what that experience means to me. Do I choose to feel confined and imprisoned by this? Or do I choose to feel, okay, this isn't ideal. How are there other ways that I can connect with people? And everyone forgets that you have that choice. I forgot temporarily. And when I remembered that I had that choice, it made that whole 15 months-ish a lot more easy to navigate than they might otherwise have been. And I'm not downplaying people who struggle with that. I'm not making light of that in any way, because there are some very difficult times people dealt with. I'm not downplaying.
For sure. For sure. But the big thing to think about is you talk about perspective, is nothing really happens in a vacuum. So all the negative things you're experiencing happen while there's a lot of positivity, and all the positive things that are happening happen while there's also negative things happening around the world. And the only difference with why you're happy or sad and all that kind of stuff is what your mind is pivoting and focusing on. Yes. So whether you decide to focus on that positive or negative, it is a choice. It doesn't make the choice easy, and it doesn't make everybody wrong for feeling a negative emotion, because every emotion is meant to be felt. But it is an idea that you can continually focus on. Yes, there are positive things happening all the time, all around us, if I choose to seek that out and look in that direction.
Yes. And I particularly like what you said about it doesn't make them wrong because they feel differently than I do. I think oftentimes when we don't understand someone's perspective, or we fear that person's perspective, we automatically make them wrong and we vilify them because of we don't understand it. And how awesome would it be if, like you said, instead of vilifying that which we do not understand, we simply accept and recognize that positive and negative, and this is a law of physics, positive and negative cannot reside in the same space. And that's okay. I'm going to choose one or the other, and they are whole and worthy and capable of choosing whatever they want to choose. But yeah, I love that you said that. I want to talk a little bit about fear though. We're going to switch gears for a minute because it kind of made me think of fear. When I think about everything that you've done, I mean, professional basketball, an author, you're like super charismatic and you have a family and you're famous and all these things, right? That doesn't come without adversity, obviously. And I can imagine at various points in time, as you achieved certain things, fear had to have been a companion along that journey. Talk about the role that fear has played in your journey to this understanding of truths, frankly.
First thing I think we should all, me included, which I'm going to start doing today, is write down, I want to learn. Just write it down. I want to learn. I want to experience. I want to learn. I want to understand. And I want to evolve. I hope that in 20 years, I'm like, you know what? You know, I've evolved since my book, and that book needs corrections because some of it might be, you know, quote unquote wrong. You know, I want to update it. Just write down that you want to learn, because that takes away a lot of fear, a fear of being right, fear of perfection. There is no perfection. You know, progress over perfection is a big thing for me. And fear, to me, fear is in the looking, not the leaping. Fear is in the thinking, not the leaping. Those ropes courses that, you know, third graders and fourth graders go to, where they have to, you know, walk on the, along the trees, and then they jump into a bar and try to catch it. They stand up at the ledge and they shiver. And when they jump, they're almost smiling with excitement, and they realize that it doesn't matter if you catch it or you don't catch it, you know, you're going to be okay at the end of the day. So I really do more action instead of the thought process about it, which helps a lot with fear and anxiety. And then when it comes to fear, it comes to making the wrong choice or making the right choice. And if you're learning, there is no wrong choices. And if you reprogram your mind to realize that choices can bring positive things to you, can bring negative things. Everybody makes lists, pros and cons. Mm-hmm. Should I do this or should I do this? Oh, well, the pros outweigh the cons. well, you can kind of, not that it doesn't exist, but you can take away the cons and just look at the pros and the pros. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, there are cons there. I'm not trying to say that they don't exist. And there might be some hardship with whatever that you choose because it comes with consequences. But once you make the choice, you have to focus on all the things that are being added into your life, not the things that are being taken away by not making a different choice, because you can't go back and make that choice. Yeah. So it's just, again, perspective and where your mind shifts and said, hey, these are all the things that are added to my life. And I'm going to be in constant gratitude focusing on those things, because if I didn't make this choice, I wouldn't have those things.
Ah, yes. Constant gratitude. I love that you said that. And the whole, I want to learn. I mean, my whole career, everything about my life has been about learning, frankly. And I so resonate with that. I think the other thing too, that you said was the fear is, if I'm saying this correctly, the fear was more in the looking and not in the leaping. And that is so true. It is so true. We get more wound up about playing out 15 gajillion scenarios than we would if we just took the leap, you know? And Nike obviously nailed it best with Just Do It, but that's, I mean, how much simpler can you make it?
So. Yeah. Ironically, I love hypotheticals and I don't get stressed out about it. And my wife's like, I don't want to go over hypotheticals. Just tell me what are the realities or whatever. I'm just like, well, it could be this and it could lead to this and it could lead to this. And I'm such an optimist where I'm just like, hey, imagine you have the ability to imagine whatever you want to imagine. That is definitely your choice. And yes, you can imagine the best case scenario in every option. And I say, I think I said in the book where even when I'm at my worst, I can envision myself at my best. Mm-hmm. So even in the worst case scenario, I can even envision a best case. So with all those choices, with all that fear, with all that anxiety, you fight it by being authentic. You fight it with making good choices. You fight it with this new confidence and knowing who you are and asking the right questions and seeking out the answers and just always constantly trying to learn. And once you realize that, I mean, just take a look around, just show me who's perfect.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd love to talk to that person and then maybe we can sit down and write a second book, with that person. And then that'll be a simple, that's the last book. I don't think anybody will need another book. So right. It's just this constant improvement, evolution, and just learning process.
What I particularly keyed into is that you didn't once say, get rid of fear. Fear doesn't exist. You have not said that. And what I find fascinating is that everything that you have said essentially states fear exists, and it's how we choose to view that fear, sit with it, embrace it or not, that informs the actions that we take as a result. And I love that so much. One of the other things you said a while back was, what you seek, you will find. And I absolutely believe that. If you're looking for people to be jerks to you and you're looking for bad things to happen, I got to tell you, that's what you're going to find. It's not saying that you have exponentially magnified your opportunities for bad things. It's just, that's what you're going to find. That's what you're going to focus on. And I am a huge proponent of, like I said, assuming positive intent and leading with love. And I have been accused, and you kind of said this a little while ago, I have been accused of being a victim of toxic positivity. And that's not true. Toxic positivity does exist. And in my view, it's an avoidant thing. It's a person who doesn't want to deal with anything. Like, it's all rainbows and unicorns all the time. It's going to be fine. Everything's fine. It's going to be fine. I'm thinking positively. It's all going to be fine. That's different than being optimistic. Optimistic is exactly what you described. It's running the scenarios and choosing to find the ones that lead to the positive outcomes. You know, I did a whole episode on risk management, AKA managing worry. You know, worries are the things that have not yet happened. And we can choose to manage those very differently by looking at them objectively and getting them out of our heads on a piece of paper and walking through that. So what would you say to someone who might call you a victim of toxic positivity? What would you say?
I was listening to your words, and I was just thinking of what you mentioned at the very beginning of this podcast when you're talking about saying sorry. And it's all about action. It's all about, okay, then show me a different way. You know, you think it's all great. How is it all great? You think it's all great. What do you mean? And being the light and showing them that there is a different way, and not just saying, hey man, you'll get over it. Well, how am I going to get over it? How am I going to move forward? How am I going to be positive? All that kind of stuff. And then being part of that positive movement. And so a lot of times it is like, I don't like being part of certain conversations. I want to be part of these conversations, not those conversations, because these conversations help improve. These help heal. These help connect. Those are the things that I want to be part of. So in my book, I said, sorry only means something really if you turn it into action. So you have to turn things into action. So you mentioned it. I can say I'm sorry, but there's another, I forget the word you use, but there's another component. Yeah, there's another component to it that makes it come to fruition. And so for me, it's action. You turn sorry into action by showing the person you're sorry, by not repeating it again, by when it comes up, pivoting and going to a different way and highlighting their strength instead of highlighting their weaknesses and things of that nature.
Yeah. Oh, I love that so much. You know, it's often, and I can imagine someone listening would be like, oh my gosh, you guys talked about so many cool things and it sounds really awesome and wonderful. And I want to be in that club and I don't know where the hell to begin. So if you were to give someone one step they could take today to begin the journey of understanding, and to begin the journey of having a more optimistic view and an optimistic way of operating, what's one of the first steps you might recommend to someone?
You know, it's interesting. A lot of interviews, like, what's your lasting message? What would you like to say? And man, I have like 100 of them. Just depends on the person. But I think one of the most amazing things you can do is you can take a calendar out, circle a day, and you just say, that day is going to be my day for change. You just, it could be whatever the date is today. I'm looking down, it's July 14th. It's a Wednesday. And I can say on July 28th, that's my day. That is going to be my day for inspiration, my day for optimism, my day for whatever. But the difference is, like we talked about, it's less than just saying it. You have to create it in your mind. You have to envision it. Okay. So if that's my day for change, then what do I need to prepare? What do I need to do to prepare? What's going to change about me? And you envision everything you can down to as many details as you can. So when that day comes, you're ready to hit the ground running and you're rolling. And let's just say you only get through half the day and all of a sudden somebody cuts you off in that car and you just boom, you're going back to square one. All it takes is circling the day again. It's one day. It could turn into 2 days next month. I want to have a week of change. And you can even do something as drastic as, you know what? I'm a really shy person, which is totally fine. Shy people are amazing, but I want to be outgoing for this 1 week. I want to try it out. Doesn't mean that, you know, I give away who I am as a person. I'm not authentic. It just says, hey, if that's something I want to add to my life or add to who I am, I'm going to try that out for a day, 2 days, a week, and just constantly circle days and just inspire yourself. Realize that so much is possible if you just give it thought and then put words into action.
Oh, I love that. And the thing I love the most is the get curious part. I talk all the time about getting curious. You don't have to commit to forever. Just get curious. Do it one time. You might like it. You might not like it. It doesn't matter. Get curious.
The whole thing is my daughter with food.
Oh.
I don't want it. You don't know you don't want it. You haven't tried it. And then she tries it and it's her favorite thing and she won't give it up. And it's just like, it's a perfect, perfect window into who we are as people. We get stuck into these routines, and I love routines, but we get stuck into life routines and not being curious and not trying to evolve and not trying to. And if things are working out for you, great. I love routine on game days. It's what helped me stay successful as an athlete. But at the end of the day too, you also need to open your mind. You need to grow and you need to learn and you need to be super open-minded.
Wow. You know, dude, we could probably talk another 2 hours. This has been so fun and so enlightening. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me. I couldn't be more excited.
So how can people get in touch with you, or how can they learn more about what you're doing? Fill us in and I'll make sure it goes into the show notes.
I'm trying to do as much as I can to be on social media. My daughter and my son and my incredible, supportive, loving wife, take up the greatest amount of time in the best way possible. But I'm on social media. I have my website. I'm beginning to do speaking, which I'm absolutely excited about, and just reaching out and talking to people. And then basketball. I mean, you can literally tune in and watch my basketball games this coming up year. My name is Taylor Rochesty. TaylorRochesty.com is the website. T Rochesty is most of my handles on Instagram and Twitter. And I hope you'll leave a link because my last name is as complex as it is. But I just love to connect. So a great thing about writing this book is I got more involved in social media, and I've been reaching out and talking with so many different people that have read stuff in the book and wanted to talk about it. So I'm around. I'm definitely
awesome. Around. Oh, I'm so happy to hear that. You guys give him some love. Go to the website, check out the book. I checked it out. You can get it all kinds of places. Show him some love and get in touch with him. I can tell you, just having spent the last hour with this dude, if you don't reach out, you're going to miss. You just need to go hear more about him. So as you wrap up today's episode and you get ready to hit stop, what action can you take today? And I would encourage you to do exactly what Taylor said. Pick one thing you want to change and choose a day. Before you go to bed tonight, look at your calendar, choose a day. You don't have to do it forever. Choose a day. And then as you head into reflection today, the ahas, the oh no's, and the yippees, the what did you learn and what questions that you have and what can you celebrate, I would encourage you to take a little moment to think about, is there someone to whom you would like to make amends? And what could that look like? And what's the next step? And how quickly can you take that step? So that's it for this edition. I'd love to continue the conversation. You can find us at theencourageproject.com. You can find me on LinkedIn. You can find us on Instagram at @the_encourage_project. And you can always send me an email to hello@theencourageproject.com. No matter where you are in the world, I hope this finds you well. Be safe, be well, and take care.